Hello, and welcome to The Oscar Went To, the podcast that looks back at a year in film and sees what films endured, what films didn't, and attempts to figure out why. Please give it up for your masters of ceremony, Max Salim and Nick Mastad.
Freaking back,
bro. It is freaking good to see your face.
I mean, you've been back the whole time, but I'm happy to be back. I'm happy that, I mean, maybe you are getting ready to tell me that I've been voted off the podcast, but at least for this moment, I got a mic in front of me, got you in front of me on Zoom. Can't complain.
Yeah, you know, we can get to that later. I mean, let's just catch up for a while. No, you're not being replaced, but we've had fun while you're away. But it is good to have you back. Good to see your face via FaceTime. How are you? First of all, how are you?
I'm good.
You're good. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think I said on the podcast that I was going to produce a movie.
Yes. Yes.
And that's where I've been.
Yes, that's where you've been, and I've been, you know, it was kind of, for a second there, it was kind of like letters from like a soldier, where I was like communicating like to the listeners of like, okay, I talked with Max this week, he's in the eye of the storm for production, it sounded like it was going well, looking forward to catching up. So there has been sort of piecemeal messages from you through me to the listeners.
It's fun. I mean, this is pretty much the first time you and I are talking for more than a couple minutes, I feel like.
Yes. Yes. I think we exchanged two texts and had maybe a 5-minute phone conversation.
And I probably took like 72 hours between texts to get back to you.
Maybe. I don't. Yeah.
I do think it's funny that I thought that some point in maybe February, like, well, I mean, we have an off day, you know, we do 6-day weeks on the production. So I could like do a podcast on the off day. That'd be pretty easy.
Yeah.
That was a foolish thought. Definitely,
yeah. Okay. I didn't know I was here. Okay. So because it was a 3-week production, correct?
Yeah. A little longer than 3-week production. 21 days of shooting.
Right. Okay.
And we did 6-day weeks.
Got it. Okay, cool. So it's 21 days productions, and are the off days as like considered production days as well? That's part of the production because it's like, no.
Nope. So it's 21 off days over 24 days.
Gotcha.
We shot.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. Because on Instagram, I was following everyone and it was always counting down like day blank of 21. Interesting. So I didn't know. And I was curious, like if that was like, I didn't know you guys had days off. And I imagine having one day off.
Yeah, I mean, it would be pretty. So this was my first film that I've basically worked on, and I was the producer of the film. So I was in charge, but I was also like learning a lot of stuff as I go. Sure. And I learned a lot in those 3 weeks. For example, it would be impossible to do 7-day weeks, to like do 21 straight days.
And was that something that going into production you had maybe entertained, or at least it sounds like that in your head was like, oh, that might be possible, just to like, if we just do 21 straight.
It crossed my head that like maybe the last week we could do 7 days, or like, I'm pretty sure it's against labor laws to do 21 straight 12-hour days.
Right. right.
But it somehow in my head, it was like, oh, I mean, if we have to do a 7th day, like I'm sure we can do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But no,
not the case.
Okay. And so do you feel recovered from the production right now? Like in terms of just like on a physical, mental level, do you feel like you're kind of like, okay, like you're rejuvenated, you're caught up on sleep, you're like renewed. Do you feel that? Or do you feel like lingering sort of like, no, I'm still coming out of this fog that was the production?
I do feel recovered at this point. But I will say that it was more, I mean, obviously like making a movie is a lot of work. I've never spoken to anyone that was like, oh yeah, that was pretty easy or whatever, especially like a low budget movie. To give context, I don't know what the final budget of the film will be in the end. And I don't think Kimball will mind me saying this on the podcast, but we spent about $680,000 in these 21 days, which is a shit ton of money on one hand. But in the scheme of film productions, that's like a a moderate low budget, it's considered, but it's like a pretty tiny budget film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think any low budget film is always going to be really hard work because you are just you're probably understaffed. The staff is underpaid. The amenities are underprovided and it just turns into a grind. But this was more than I ever imagined. It was a complete like suspension of life, you know, like I didn't do much thinking about anything besides the movie, because even though they're 12-hour days, like by the time you get to location for the day and but then by the time you leave and eat something, it's like bedtime. And then you have fucked up production dreams, or at least I did. and then you wake up and start it all over again. So in some ways, it was horrible. Like I remember on day 9 thinking, like, I cannot fucking wait for this to be over.
Mm.
But then it's not like it became fun, but it became such a norm that I was sort of becoming, I was getting like some Sunday scaries as we got to like day 17, day 18, day 19 for it to be over, because it had just been like all I knew for 3 weeks, being in these shitty motels with these same 25 people day in and day out. So crazy experience. Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, they say that, I think it's like 2 weeks immersed in like a foreign language before you start to like adapt to it and like actually like understand some of it. And I wonder if that's, I wonder if that's true. And B, I wonder if it is true, if that's like somewhat applicable to like what you're describing, where it's like you just like adapt even to the most like stressful of circumstances to the point of like, well, it's the norm. And
I don't know, man. It was really something. And then at the same time, I thought I'd be very relieved to be done and it would feel like first day of summer kind of, but it was sort of an opposite. It was sort of like, I needed a couple days to, I don't know, readapt to like, I didn't think about like, oh, where am I going to get a meal or like what am I going to eat and at what time? Like it was all had been regimented for weeks prior.
Yeah.
So, just another small example. I didn't eat the first day off until like 2 p.m. because it was like not on my radar
to
like make some breakfast.
And as the producer, like, is it sort of the thing of like the production, so last day of production, like production wraps, did you have a lot of like cleanup to do in regards to just like tying up loose ends, like all this stuff? So like production like kind of like trickled out after a little while for you, or was it kind of like stuff wrapped, we're done? You know,
so I'm still wrapping the job.
Gotcha.
And tying up loose ends. But, you know, the things I'm doing now are not nearly as time sensitive as when you're actually in production. So I can, you know, do 6 hours one day and then I can do half an hour another day and whatever. So this thing will continue to be with me. And now we're in post-production. Hopefully I'll start to see some rough cuts and we'll start working on the actual post-production of the movie. But all of that feels a little bit less intense than being in the heart of it.
Can I ask what was like the best part about the experience from your perspective? Like what was like the like?
Yeah, I guess the best thing was it felt pretty fulfilling to completely immerse yourself into something. Because even when I'm working hard in other contexts, I'm still like looking at the twin score and I'm still calling family and like, I'm still like, you know, very much connecting to the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I enjoyed not connecting to the outside world, but it did feel good to completely throw yourself into something.
I imagine the depth of to which like you can like sort of like that you were working is like a otherwise like pretty singular, hard to obtain thing.
Sure. And I asked Nick Grady, who is an acquaintance and a friend of both of ours, who was a co-producer on the project, like maybe on day 15, I asked him like, if someone put a curse on you and this was your life for the rest of your life, would you kill yourself? And without hesitation, he said, absolutely.
Damn.
So
damn.
We did 11 straight overnights. Some people might I'm sure lots of people have done this before, but I personally have never, I've never done more than four consecutive shoot days, mm-hmm. and I've never done more than one overnight.
Uh-huh.
So doing the 11 straight overnights was pretty bizarre.
Yeah. Cause, and so you're walk us through like the sleep schedule, the schedule. So you're going to bed in the morning, waking up late afternoon, I imagine, going to work.
So you try to work your way into them. So like okay. on the end of week two, we were like, I think, I don't even know. It all blends together now. I think it was the end of week one. We worked our way into overnight. So as the week went on, our call times went from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., right? So your uh-huh. day went from 3 p.m. until 3 or 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
and then to full-fledged overnights where you were like doing 6 p.m. to 7 a.m. roughly.
Interesting.
And we kicked that off in a horrible fashion where we did this in, so we had to shoot a scene, a substantial scene in the movie takes place. As you know, you've read the script, right?
Yep.
In a car. Do you remember like there's an eight page dialogue in the first 10 pages of the script. Mm-hmm. It all takes place in a car and it's raining biblically. Right. So there's no really good way of doing this on a shoestring budget. And so what we ended up doing was we rented a hockey arena that didn't have ice. Okay. And then we rented rain towers and we shot these scenes inside a car with rain towers going. The car is stationary.
Mm-hmm.
There's grips in ponchos rocking the car. And there's fans blowing the rain. And the combination of all these things creates what I hope in the end will make it appear like the car is moving.
Sure.
And it's raining very hard. But it's very cumbersome. It's soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting is very complicated because you don't have the freedom of just plopping a light down wherever you want. And the quarters are very close. And it was immensely harder than I imagined. So that day was supposed to be like our nice, easy way of easing ourselves into overnights, going from 3 p.m. until 3 a.m. And then we'd hit the ground running on the proper overnights. But that day we went like, we went like 19 hours because it was so slow moving. So at like 9 a.m., we were like sweeping water out of the out of the hockey arena.
Oh my God.
And that was by far the worst day of shooting. But that's how we like got going in the overnight. So sort of a jarring introduction.
Yeah. Overnight. Oh my God. And how many nights were you in the hockey or how many?
Just this one.
Just
and that's
that
why
one.
We had to go so long because it was like, it's now or never for these shots. Like we have to do it.
Oh my God. Because I saw an Insta story. It might have been of this where it was like a pretty elaborate light setup. I assume it was this because they were in the car and it was all indoor and there was like a spinning light fixture.
Yeah. So that spinning light is like giving just like a small movement of shadow in the car to give like the feeling that maybe a street light is passing by or something like that.
Okay. And from your summation or your knowledge, like what... I imagine like a bigger budget movie, like in terms of like, you know, when we see people, scenes that take place in moving cars, obviously like bigger budget, it would be more, probably more fluid and more, it'd just be easier. There'd probably be like bigger mechanisms that could ease the burden on like grips or the like manpower of it. But essentially speaking, I imagine it's like somewhat the same way where it's like, it's a stationary car. The lighting is way more complicated than viewers would ever think. And there's way more going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I guess, you know, because this was a puzzle of the script that I had to figure out was how to go about shooting this within our budget.
Hmm.
I think if you really wanted to sell it, what you would do is you'd use a process trailer, which is like where a car sits on a trailer and is pulled by another car. And then on that trailer, you would rig your rain machine.
Gotcha.
So that you would have a physically moving car through space. I think mostly on a bigger budget, they wouldn't be like, let's do these, you know, 11 pages in one night, which was just the mistake
sure.
that I take blamed for that. Or like you were saying, just a more elaborate and more manpower working towards the same, you know, setup.
Yeah.
Roughly that we had.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. My next question was going to be what the like hardest piece of production was, but it sounds like you may have just answered that, or at least that was the hardest night.
Yeah. That was the most awful night.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And everyone's getting pretty short and chippy with each other too, as sure. you might be able to imagine,
sure.
because some people were working super hard, mm-hmm. but a lot of people were sitting around, you know, like Man. Waiting for, because there's yeah. no movement, there's no traffic to stop, there's no equipment to unload. There's like, so this was a kind of a toxic stew for us.
Sure.
The yeah. hardest was now connecting these rain scenes. Having so much of the movie take place in rain on this low of a budget was also probably a mistake. I hope it works cool. I hope it works out. I hope it's super cool. And I hope it like really gives a mood to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the hardest part was now connecting these scenes that I was just talking about to the actual exterior scenes, because this whole thing happens around a near car accident, right?
Yeah.
And so then we had to get out of the car and shoot these exteriors of the car. Mm-hmm. We have mm-hmm. to shoot the car in rain, getting into a near accident with another car. And so that involved completely closing down a road. That involved a shit ton of rain towers, $5,000 worth of water. We spent $5,000 on a tanker to come and keep our rain machines full, which was insane.
Wow.
And then stunt drivers, right?
Yeah.
Lighting. And that was like the hardest night. And what was interesting is those nights we were really capturing, like, you would work all night long and you would get like 12 seconds of the movie in the can. You know, it was like so arduous.
Wow.
Compared to other nights you'd shoot and you'd be like, okay, we shot 1/10 of the movie tonight.
Okay.
Basically, you'd shoot eight pages, nine pages. So,
yeah. Wow. Wow. Insane. But also, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, like hearing that, like kind of, just that, like that kind of ratio of getting like, you know, 12 seconds one night and 1/10 of the movie another night, that like feels like a reminder that it's like a creative process. Cause like that to me is like reflective of like creative work, where it's like, wait a second, like I spent the exact amount of time and feel like I worked just as hard, if not harder, today than I did yesterday, and yet like I only got this much, even if it's like writing or, you know, like I feel like
totally
that's reflective of creativity, which is cool, even for like a huge, relatively like big, like seemingly like, when you, I don't know, when I see like, it's just a nice reminder that production is like a creative act as well. I mean, obviously it is, but it's just
definitely yeah. But it's like a creative act in a very cumbersome, large moving machine, you know? It's like yeah. you are moving like 30 people and literally tons of equipment, mm-hmm. and bureaucracy and actors. You are trying to just like move this thing in a way that then you fill a frame, which can be a close-up of an actor, you know? Like sometimes yeah. that was like really mind-boggling to me, just the amount of time and effort and hands needed to then, in the end, all you're doing is you're filling a frame. And sometimes those frames are really simple and sometimes they're really complicated. But yeah.
Wow.
It is creative. It's a creative process in the end, but it is so embedded in the physical world. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
It does. I mean, it's just like, it really strikes me as like, it's like, because it's like, if you, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you as a producer are doing your job right, the like director and the actors aren't having to think about any of that. Or is that not necessarily the case?
Well, yeah. I mean, definitely the actors aren't,
I suppose the actors,
thinking
for sure.
about
yeah.
that. Definitely not. The director, and I wish we'd had Gio on. Maybe we'll do a little midweek episode to kind of debrief mm-hmm. him, because I'm sure he would have a lot of stuff to say
yeah.
about this process too. Gio was on our Great Beauty episode, and the mm-hmm. director of this film I'm talking about. I mean, it was, I can imagine once you are like Iñárritu or like Spielberg mm-hmm. or something like that, these production problems you don't care about and it's your producer's job that you don't think about them. Hmm. Sure. But I think on anything like that doesn't have an unlimited budget, it becomes a pretty collaborative effort between the producer and the director. And I think Gio would agree with this, okay, that there's no way, unless you're shooting a super simple film, there's no way that the director's not going to have to compromise. And he has to compromise because of production limitations, you mm-hmm. know? And so it becomes sort of a trade-off. And you arrive at these decisions through collaboration. So I think Gio gotcha. Was, he didn't know the in and out of every fucking pain in the ass or like where are the porta potties going to go, this kind of stuff. But I think he, mm-hmm. you know, had his fingers on the pulse of the production in general.
That makes sense. That makes sense. In our brief phone call that we had, the phrase that you used has stuck with me, and that was, relentless decision making, which like honestly like shook me to my core, just like that concept where it just sounds like the very definition of being on 100% of the time is like encapsulated in that phrase.
Wow. Okay. I don't remember saying that, but that's pretty accurate. So I'll take credit for it. We had we had a lot of people quit, which I was surprised about. And kind of other people who had a lot more feature experience were like, yeah, this is kind of how it works.
Interesting.
I'm sure a lot of the crew hates me at this point, but I also think that's like kind of part of the process in a lot of ways too. That unfortunately production sort of needs to be the teacher of the whole thing, you know, like the person slapping your wrist a little bit. And our DP put it well. So we had a lot of people quit. We probably had like 6 people quit of the 25.
Wow.
And I think our DP, Bo Hakala, put it aptly and correctly when he said, some people want to be sailors, but then they get on a boat and they're like, oh shit, I get super seasick. And I thought that was kind of accurate because it is... It's not for everyone, which leads me to my question for you, mm-hmm. was that you had an opportunity to work on this. Mm-hmm. With this little bit of context you have, are you regretful you didn't work on it? Or do you think that maybe this, you know, wouldn't have been fun? It definitely wouldn't have been fun. So don't let me say fun, but like something you enjoyed.
I don't regret my decision to not do it. But it's mostly because when you describe the kind of vacuum existence that it is, there were things outside in life that like I need, like, you know, in the 3 weeks that the production was happening, live performance, I had like my first 3 live performances. I had a family trip planned where, you know, post-vax family trip planned, which like arguably, yes, the family trip like that is like, you know, could be rescheduled, but it was already in place. There was an extremely close friend's like wedding, which I spoke at, like, you know, these kind of things. Like I wasn't in a place with like the exterior life to be able, I think, to be the sailor that is necessary for the production. I am envious of that. Like I feel like you inevitably learned a lot about yourself, on top of learning about like what a feature film, what it is to produce a feature film, what it's like to be on a feature film set, all of that. And of that, I am envious of that experience. I wish I had that, and I am like seeking that. So in that regard, I'm bummed to have missed, but I think like timing wise, it just wasn't correct for me.
All right. Well, I can't say that I have
another
one of these.
We'll make it happen
in me. But if I do, obviously you'll come on the next ride. I want to segue into some other stuff to catch up with you about, but I will just in closing say, really makes you appreciate filmmaking. You know, like I'm not one to usually like very often say like, oh, that film sucks, or that film's like horrible, or walk out of a movie. But I think I'll be less likely just the immense amount of man hours that go into to doing something like this. So
yeah, no, that makes total sense. Total sense. I think wrapping up this conversation, it does blow my mind, even on like the short films we did back in the day. Anytime I've had like the privilege of being on set, it has always blown my mind. It feels like it's a comical amount of work. Like it's not even just like, because it's like when you're watching something, especially if you're watching something semi-decent, it all seems like pretty effortless. Like whatever it is, like it just, it feels very natural what you're watching if it's like semi-good. And like the fact that like you get on set and you learn that it's like, oh, like the fact that there's like no shadows on this, or the light is a specific way, and the like the wardrobe that the characters are wearing, and the sound, and the like hold for an airplane noise, hold for that weird vent noise, like every like little piece of minutia that is like tweaked and controlled, it is mind blowing. Like the little taste of it that I've gotten, it's like it feels like it's truly. Like the purity that is like a creative vision of like this came from someone's brain and their mind, to like how much like absolute practical, like violent practicality is involved with bringing that to life. It like seems like poetic to me because they're on such opposite ends of the spectrum.
It is, you put it so well, when it is a comical amount of work that goes into, again, creating just an image. Basically.
Yeah. Right.
And, right. And it's like, I don't want to say it's like the most, cause I'm sure there's like, I just know this medium well, and I'm sure there's other mediums that people work really hard in, but I don't know that there's like, you know, if you're like a musician, there's some, you can write a song purely, you know, on a piano or with a guitar, like you and that instrument, and you can make something happen. Or if you're a writer, writing can be super hard. It can be harder than making a film in some ways, or more painful than making a film in some ways. But in the end, it's like you and your fingers on a keyboard or on a pen or something like that. Same with photography and going down the list. Like, I'm not saying other artists don't work hard, but this is a comical amount of work to create something.
It's fucked up. No, totally. That makes total sense.
It seems like you should be like going to the moon or something for the amount of like time and effort.
Right.
And I mean, when you're just making a movie, like,
yes. I mean, when you're describing paying a like tanker of like a water tanker to like keep the water supply up, that like a movie isn't the first thing that comes to mind with like what that might be for. Like a tanker of fucking water is, that's like municipal shit, you know, like that's wild. It's incredible.
I want to know a little bit about your life. I'm envious that I think New York City is one of the coolest cities in the world. I don't like love being in New York all the time, but I am super jealous that you're there this summer, just from what I've been hearing, and the city sounds like it's back. What's your experience been?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always interesting, like, because I haven't been in New York all that long. It's probably been 2 years without the pandemic. So it's always interesting to hear news, like people like not in the city say news about the city to me and be like, earlier you had said like, oh, so New York is like really popping off. It is. Like what it feels like is, it does feel like it's like there are increasingly more feelings of like, and reminders of like life before the pandemic in New York, which is like really, it ranges from like a really euphoric feeling to like, oh yeah, like this is like back to work sort of like feeling. So it's just like, so I've had a couple live performances and I've gone to a couple live shows, and those like by a long shot have been the biggest reminders and like kind of like adrenaline boosts of like life returning. Cause overall, like it feels pretty normal here now. Like coffee shops are relatively like pretty much open. Masks are somewhat off. I went to a film forum last night, mask off. Like it was pretty cool. But yeah, like I went to like a live performance like 2 weeks ago and just talked with people and met people that I like didn't know, but like, you know, we like recognized each other. And walked away like feeling truly like I felt like I was glowing. Like I was like, man, it was like on the Lower East Side. And it's like walk to the show and like walking out of it, I was like walking Lower East Side, like to the train afterwards. And it was probably like 9 p.m. on like a Sunday or Monday night. I just felt like, okay, like this is, life is back and dreams are real. Like it felt pretty incredible, pretty euphoric. And I think my prediction will be, I think it'll like be, feel that way kind of for a while of just like anytime, like walking, like once a social function, like, and, cause even being at the social function, you're like kind of like in it. So you're not like able to reflect, but like walking, like once it's done, you're kind of like, oh damn, like life is really good. Like this is really good. Forgot about this. Like this is hard to like remember like these like little specific feelings of why this feels good, which is maybe why part of the reason the pandemic was so difficult. Cause it was just like, well, yeah, there's no live shows and that sucks. But like, but also like, I'm still writing, you know? And it's like, no. Like doing a live show, walking away from live show. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. But you like, I mean, the reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason you're in New York is for these things, not to record a podcast and write in your small apartment.
You know, like, sure. No. Yeah. Not knocking either one of those things, but yes. But yes, 100%. It was like a huge reminder of identity and like, and so it's like to be back in like the like community, which is hyper specific and appreciated. And there is just like that, like the shared language, the shared like appreciation and like knowledge of like, you know, what we do and the work that's put into it. It's just like nice to have that, like be in that community again, or at least be engaged in that community again and just have that like reflection of who you are, that piece of you where it's like, oh, that's not pretend. That's like, it's real. And even though it's like very fleeting in the sort of like live performance aspect of it, it's such a gratifying thing to have back. And that feels really good.
Good dude. Keep me updated. Do you have any shows coming up?
I have a show this Wednesday, which is today, based on the listeners, at 7 PM. It's free. And, I actually don't have the location. It's called Perch. Look up Perch. It's nice on my Instagram. It's on my Insta stories, Nick Mestad, on Instagram. So you can just look at my stories and it'll be on there, but very excited, testing out some new characters along with a phenomenal lineup. So yes,
you know, I'd be there.
I know you would. You, Gio and Kimbo are
super fans.
Like I'm so appreciative of you guys. You guys always came out to shows. I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it.
All right. Well, welcome to the Oscar Went To on this podcast. I'm just kidding. Oh, if we just did a 40 minute intro.
All right, today we are talking about 1981. No.
Yeah, listeners may have realized at this point we're this is not a normal episode for us.
No, it's a catch up. It's a mustard.
It's a catch up. Mm-hmm. It's a live catch up. Nick and I have barely talked since we were last on a podcast together.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of similar to how we handle like the like deep dives and stuff. Like we just didn't talk about, we like
right
consciously didn't discuss what the topic of until we got on the podcast today. So true to form.
What else did I want to, what other housekeeping did I want to do? I want to read an email.
Oh yeah.
When did I'm a little bit behind, you know, before mm-hmm. production started, we were still in pre-production. I was listening and enjoying mm-hmm. the guests, but I got to say that when production began, I lost track a little bit. So when did Donnie Darko come out? How many
Donnie
weeks
Darko
ago?
Came out, I believe beginning of May.
Okay. So a while ago.
Yeah. I'm pulling it up now to get the specific date, but I believe it was May 12th.
I got this email that actually popped up in the middle of production, gave me a little levity to see this come up on my phone. But it's from listener Cody, who has interacted with us more than once, definitely. I believe recommended Prestige as mm-hmm. one of our deep dives. And he says, appreciate today's episode, guys. I didn't realize someone could hate this movie as much as Nick does, but it definitely pulled me back a little of the nostalgia of what the movie meant to me without ruining what I think makes it great. Nice shout out to Nick being the first person to despise Donnie Darko ever.
Meathead classic. No. What was it?
No. Idiot's masterpiece.
Idiot's masterpiece is way too harsh. I will walk back on calling it an Idiot's masterpiece, but I don't think it's a good movie.
Cody goes on to say, I totally agree that this has some Mulholland Drive to it, and I think that's the best way to look at the movie. My assumption is that the entirety of the movie up until the restart of the October night before the jet engine falls from the sky is a dream slash daydream of Donnie's life and his existential thoughts, much like Mulholland Drive. It would explain why in every situation, Donnie is the clear protagonist, who is much more clever, intelligent, and capable than those around him. The strange duality with every character would almost be akin to the black and white misanthropic view of a high school teenager, an exaggerated front of what's on the surface and the private life that is Donnie's disdained view of who these people really are. Much like Holden Caulfield, as Max pointed to, the time traveling storyline is his thoughts on the afterlife and what is real and isn't real in this world or the next. I don't think the jet engine falling through the roof was ever actually an event that transpired. I think Donnie is actually mentally unstable teenager who's struggling to work through mental issues and actually takes his own life at the end of the movie. The jet engine, or in quotations, the sky falling, would be the metaphor for the trope of they'll miss me when I'm gone, or this will rock their world, literally embodied in the house itself shaking. I think with that in mind, it makes the slight wave and acknowledgement between his mom and Gretchen at the end of the movie much more poignant. A simple act of kindness from a stranger to a mother who has lost their child. I think it helps take a little of the absurdity of everyone carrying a wormhole with them at all times, or maybe it adds to it. I don't know. Just my two cents. Either way, great episode, guys. So I like that. I wish we had that when we were doing the episode, because I think that the movie is a little fresher in my head. I could jam on some of those concepts.
For sure. Very thoughtful. Thank you for the very thoughtful email, Cody. Question, when did that come in?
May 12th.
May 12th. Interesting that he references Mulholland Drive, which we did last week, which is like, it's just like odd to me that when he references Mulholland Drive, I know Mulholland Drive, like arguably had like being a dream sequence for part of it is like, that's like, I know exactly what he's talking about, which nice. Like that. Thank you, Cody.
All right. This has gone longer. This was supposed to be like a little mini catch-up episode, so it wasn't super awkward when we did a real episode with each other.
The next episode is going to be completely devoid of awkwardness. So
we got it out of our systems.
Mission accomplished. Yeah. I didn't feel like this was awkward at all. This is like kind of just like a performative like catch-up phone call, which feels like, I think we did a pretty good job.
It's actually just two friends catching up over the last month that we're pawning off as content.
Shooting the shit. Hey, if you can monetize it, if you're not monetizing something that can be monetized, you're dumb.
Yeah, we're making so much money from our sponsors off this episode, suckers.
I went to an optometrist the other day, and bad news, I got dollar signs for pupils.
All right. I'm going to bid you and the listeners farewell. This has been a nice little catch up, and we'll talk about actual movies next week on the Oscar Went To.
Love it. It's been a pleasure. Looking forward to it, Max. Adieu, everyone.
Ciao.